This evening, I'd like to look at some passages and at least start looking at something to do with the trial of Christ. We won't get through it all because he had several phases of his trial. And of course, in this trial, Jesus Christ, the God-man upon earth, he was bound. He was bound. And his enemies thought, well, they had all the power, and here's this man, he's bound. And yet, of course, the truth of the matter is that he was able to break those bands. There was no bands that could actually hold him at all. But the natural man, those who are in opposition to God, they don't want any Messiah's way. They don't want anything to do with the rule and reign of Messiah. So we're going to look at some of these aspects this evening. And we'll look first of all in John's Gospel and chapter 18. Now, John is the only one of the Gospel writers who has the interview or trial before Annas, the high priest. And yet he doesn't have the trial or appearance, the interview, whatever you like to call it, before Caiaphas, Joseph Caiaphas. So we go to the synoptics to look at the trial before Caiaphas. But first of all, we go to the trial before Annas, which is only found in John's Gospel, and we haven't really got time to look at it today, but you can look at this in your own time. And that is that if you compare the Gospels, you'll see that Annas and Caiaphas were in the same place. Some think that Annas, the high priest, had an apartment in Caiaphas's house. Caiaphas had the main part of the property as high priest. Now, I need to explain, keep talking about Annas the high priest. Well, that's what the scriptures do, so I'll explain that. But just on this point, what we're going to look at this evening all takes place in the house of Caiaphas, Joseph Caiaphas, who was the high priest at the time. And Annas, who was his father-in-law, he probably had a wing, or if he didn't live in that wing, he was given a place where he could interview. So it all takes place in this house of Caiaphas, which, incidentally, the ruins thereof still exist and are being excavated. And I'll say some more about that and how that confirms what we find in the scriptures. But let's just read the passage first from John chapter 18 and verse 12. So this is just after the arrest of Jesus. Verse 12 of chapter 18, John's Gospel. Then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now it was Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another disciple. Now that disciple was known to the high priest and went with Jesus into the courtyard of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spake to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servants and officers who had made a fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine. Jesus answered him, "I spoke openly to the world. I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet. And in secret I have said nothing. "Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said." And when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, "Do you answer the high priest like that?" Jesus answered him, "If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why do you strike me?" Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, "You are not also one of his disciples, are you?" He denied it, said, "I am not." One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Peter then denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed. And then just the beginning of verse 28, then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. So here in verse, in the first few verses, it says that they led him to Annas, away to Annas first, and then he was sent from Annas bound to Caiaphas. And then in verse 28, they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. Okay, so there is the appearance before Caiaphas, which is alluded to here in John's Gospel, but there's no details of it. But we know that John records that he had an interview or a trial before Caiaphas. But for the details of that, we need to go to the Synoptic Gospels. And they don't have, as I say, this appearance before Annas. Now, we get confused. We talk about the high priest. Here, John talks about the high priest. And he calls Annas the high priest. And then you find, well, Caiaphas was the high priest. So what's going on here? Well, what happened was that Annas was the high priest from AD 6 to 15. He was put in office by Quirinius, who, if you'll know, was the governor of Syria, as mentioned in Luke's Gospel. And he was put out by Valerius Gratus, Pilate's predecessor. But out of office, he held the title, like a US president. So you have a serving president, a President Trump as he is now, but all the previous presidents who are still alive, they're addressed and they're still called presidents, aren't they? They can be called presidents. And the same in, you know, you can be a retired major in the army or something, and you can still have the title. So that's really what's happening here. Now, the Jews, they always regarded that their high priests, that they served for their whole lifetime. So Annas served from 6 to 15, but he was still alive for many years after that. So as far as the Jews were concerned, Annas still had a huge amount of power. He was the kind of power behind the throne. So you say, well, why was it that Caiaphas was the high priest now? And the reason was because the Romans didn't like all the power to be concentrated into one man forever until he died. And so what they did was they changed the high priest every year. The fact that Annas served from 6 to 15 and Caiaphas served from 16 to AD 36, when actually it was supposed to change every year, tells a huge story. The backstory is that Annas and his dynasty amassed a huge amount of wealth and they were able to bribe the Romans so that he could stay in office. But what happened was it came up for a re-election, if you like, every year, and the Romans always gave it to the highest bidder. So Annas, who amassed this enormous wealth, he managed to keep a dynasty of running the temple and a racket, really, for, most of the time from 6 AD until the destruction of the temple. So he had, at this time that we're reading here in John's Gospel, he had two sons in the treasury, and he had five sons who became high priests. He had Eleazar, who served just for a year between himself and Caiaphas, so he didn't go straight from Annas to Caiaphas. Eleazar, his son, was there for a year. Then there was Jonathan, his son, then Theophilus, then Matthias, and then Jonathan again. So And then there was another son he had called Annas, or Ananus. And so Annas had a son called Annas or Ananus. And so there were five sons who served as high priest in that time. And he amassed a huge amount of wealth in this time. So you find this, and Jesus alludes to it in his cleansing of the temples. At the beginning of his public ministry and at the end of his public ministry, he cleanses the temples. What was happening was that Annas and his henchmen, basically Annas was like the godfather of a mafia. And they really were. He had the temple guard as well. He had the treasury, his sons controlling the treasury. And they sold livestock to be sacrificed. And they controlled this very well. They had their stalls on the Mount of Olives and they had stalls in the temple. And you couldn't buy, you'd have to make a sacrifice. You couldn't buy the goods without using a temple shekel, a temple money. But that wasn't money that was currency outside. And so you'd have to have money changers. And they had a ridiculous rate of exchange. So Annas made a massive cut from that. And then the other thing was, although the pilgrims coming up to Jerusalem were supposed to be able to bring their own livestock, they nearly all got rejected by Annas and the priesthood and his dynasty because there was some imperfection that they saw that nobody else necessarily saw. And so they were rejected. And then they have to buy livestock from the firm, as it were. So Annas and his family amassed an enormous amount of wealth. I read in one source that by the time Titus destroyed Jerusalem in AD 70, his dynasty, his family, had amassed 2.5 billion pieces of silver, which is an astronomical amount of money. And when you think of the context of that, then you can understand how angry Jesus was that everybody was being fleeced the way they were. In fact, there are some who think that because Caiaphas was the high priest at the time of Jesus, and he tells the parable of the rich man and Lazarus, and the rich man says, "I've got five other brothers." And actually, there were five brothers who all became high priests. And there's some people who think that maybe Jesus was alluding to the fact that the rich man was Caiaphas, and the other brothers or half brothers that he had were the others who went on to be high priests, who continued this dynasty and this racket that was going on. So these sons took this dynasty from 6 AD until Ananus, the last in the dynasty, in 63 AD, and Ananus was the one who ordered the execution of James the Just, the brother of Jesus. And you'll find details about that in Josephus, if you want to know about that. He ordered the execution of James the Just, similar, in fact, to Jesus. You know, it's like to control this sect of Christianity and such like. He didn't follow the proper rules of a trial and all the rest of it. And because he didn't, he was actually deposed, and he was killed in the civil war leading up to the siege of Jerusalem. Now, the troops here who arrested Jesus in verse 12, it says a detachment of troops and the captain and the officers. The detachment, as a spera, it's a detachment of Roman soldiers, 200 men or so, and the captain was there, who was perhaps actually more than a captain. He was probably more of a colonel. So he would normally have more men than 200, but he was certainly a very important figure. Now, to arrest a person like that in, as it were, outside the city like that, the fact that the temple police went out, but they took a detachment of Roman soldiers, a large number, 200 or so, with a very important person of the rank of a colonel, or so it says captain here, but perhaps colonel, and meant that somebody was bankrolling, somebody was bankrolling Pilate to be able to provide that number of troops to do this. And you can be pretty sure it was Annas who was doing that. So, as I say, there was a veritable mafia going on. Annas had no right whatsoever to have Jesus brought before him in a coercive way like this. Certainly not bound either. So Jesus was bound, but none others but murderers and dangerous criminals could be bound. That was the law, the Jewish law at the time. They could be brought along, but they couldn't be bound, or handcuffed, like we would say. That itself was a sign of a person walking who was in handcuffs. That was a sign that this person was a murderer or a dangerous criminal, right? So, see, he hadn't, at this point, he hadn't had any charges against him, and yet it was evident he was being shown to be a dangerous criminal. So there was surely a great deal of satisfaction with Annas to find that there was Jesus. He was the one who'd got a following. He'd been, he cleansed the temple, he disrupted the trade and all these things. And now here he is before Annas, and Annas had him just where he wanted him. So, of course, Annas, his henchmen and his schemes were covert. He didn't do things openly. He did things behind the scenes to get what he wanted. But, of course, he expected that Jesus would be like him. If that's what he did to get power, then he would expect Jesus to be like that. So he's asking Jesus about his disciples and about his doctrine. He's trying to find out some secret things that Jesus might know. But, of course, Jesus says, well, there's nothing secret at all. You know, I taught in the synagogues, I taught in the temple, everybody knows what I taught. I've done nothing in secret at all, not like Annas, who did all these things behind the scenes. So Jesus says, why do you ask me? Ask those who heard me. That's what he says. So what Jesus is saying there is, this is the first thing that he's saying, is this is not due process. Here, you're bringing me in as a dangerous criminal here. You're asking me these things. But if you've got a charge against me, then you need to have witnesses. So by saying, oh, these people heard me in the temple, they heard me in the synagogues or whatever, basically what he's saying to Annas there is, he said, why do you ask me? Ask those who heard me. In other words, bring witnesses. If you've got something against me, bring witnesses. He knew that they had nothing against him. But of course, he's basically saying, you need to follow due process on this. Of course, Jesus gets struck at this point because they think that's being rude. Annas is being upbraided here by Jesus in this. He's being upbraided by saying to him, you know, you need to bring witnesses if you're going to continue this. You need to bring witnesses. There's loads out there. Right? I haven't done this thing in a corner. You need to bring these witnesses. And, of course, Annas knows that he can't do it with witnesses. And we'll find the same with Caiaphas later. And, of course, what they don't like about this is that anybody who comes before the high priest is supposed to, and certainly the Sanhedrin, as we'll see later, is supposed to come in a shamefaced way. They're supposed to beg for clemency. Jesus come in bound. He knows that the charge against him, if it's brought against him, will probably end in death because he's a dangerous murderer or criminal or something. That's the way he's being treated. And so he is expected to beg for mercy. And instead of begging for mercy, he says, you need to follow due process. You need to do things properly. So he's upbraiding Annas, and Annas probably gives the guards the nod, and they slap Jesus because they say that's no way to talk to the high priest. So what they would have known, and what Josephus says, is that the last person who stood before the Sanhedrin, or the high priest, and stood his ground, and not in a not in a humble situation, was Herod the Great. Before he became King Herod the Great, he'd murdered people, which he wasn't allowed to do because that was a capital offence. So the king and the high priest were not happy about this at all. And so Herod was arraigned before the Sanhedrin on a charge of murder, essentially. And Josephus tells us, this is 47 BC, this when Herod came. This, I say it's before he became king himself. But when Herod stood before the Sanhedrin with his body of men about him, he affrighted them all. And no one of his former accusers durst after bring any charge against him. But there was a deep silence, and nobody knew what was to be done. When affairs stood thus, one whose name was Semeas, a righteous man he was, and for that reason above all fear, who rose up and said, O you that are assessors with me, and O thou that art our king, I neither have ever myself known such a case, nor do I suppose that any of you can name it its parallel, that one who was called to take trial by us ever stood in such a manner before us. But everyone, whoever he be, that comes to be tried by this Sanhedrin, presents himself in a submissive manner, and like one that is in fear of himself, and that endeavours to move us to compassion, with his hair dishevelled and in black and mourning garment. But this admirable man Herod, who is accused of murder and called to answer so heavy an accusation, stands here clothed in purple, and with the hair of his head finely trimmed, and with his armed men about him, that if we shall condemn him by our law, he may slay us, and by overbearing justice may himself escape death. Yet do I not make this complaint against Herod himself? He is, to be sure, more concerned for himself than for the laws, but my complaint is against yourselves and your king, who gave him a license to do so. However, take you notice that God is great, and that this very man whom you are going to absolve and dismiss for the sake of Hyrcanus, that was the high priest at the time, will one day punish both you and your king himself also. And then Josephus says, nor did Semeas mistake in any part of this prediction, for when Herod had received the kingdom, he slew all the members of the Sanhedrin, and Hyrcanus himself also, the high priest. So when Herod became king, he slew that whole Sanhedrin. He said, but so this would have been burned into their minds. Like, nobody comes. Nobody comes. So if somebody comes and answers the high priest and went up like this, this guy must think he's a king with a kingdom. Nobody does this. If you come in bound like that, you need to be grovelling. But Jesus doesn't grovel because he's done nothing wrong. And all that's being done wrong is being done wrong by Annas and all his henchmen. So he calls them out for not following due process. Now, after this, of course, you've got Annas now sends him bound to Caiaphas the high priest. So he comes to Annas bound, he goes off to Caiaphas bound. So then we need to then go into Matthew's Gospel, or go to Mark's Gospel, we go to Matthew's Gospel to see just how this works out from here. Now, as I mentioned, Matthew doesn't mention the appearance before Annas, but he picks up the appearance before the Sanhedrin, which is assembled, not where it should have been assembled. If this was a capital case, it should have assembled in the Hall of Hewn Stone. That was the only place they could pass capital judgment. But they're now assembled in Joseph Caiaphas's house, right, which is not an appropriate place to be holding the trial. So if we pick that up in verse 57, and those who had laid hold of Jesus led him away to Caiaphas the high priest, this is chapter 26, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him at a distance to the high priest's courtyard, and he went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests, the elders, and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. But at last, two false witnesses came forward and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest rose and said to him, Do you answer nothing? What is it these men testify against you? But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, It is as you said. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the power and coming on the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes, saying, He has spoken blasphemy. What further need do we have of witnesses? Look, now you have heard his blasphemy. What do you think? They answered and said, He is deserving of death. Then they spat in his face and beat him, and others struck him with the palms of their hands, saying, Prophesy to us, Christ, who is the one who struck you? So the scene has now moved to Caiaphas and the assembled gathering. And yes, the point is that this house of Caiaphas, you can see this house, the ruins of it, excavation has been done, and very recently, so you probably won't find this except anything that's been published in the last 2 or 3 years, that you may have wondered how it was that in Luke's Gospel it mentions that Jesus turned and looked at Peter. Remember? And Peter then, and Peter realized, how was it that Jesus was in the house? Peter was in the courtyard. How could Jesus turn in the house and see Peter, who wasn't in the house, who was in the courtyard? Well, that problem that I'm sure has been cavilled about for many years has now been resolved. Because looking at the plan of Caiaphas' house and the arrangement of the walls, there is a direct line of sight through from where Jesus would have been right the way through to the courtyard. Only a narrow one, but Peter could have stood there and he would have seen Jesus. And Jesus would turn around and he would have seen Peter straight in his line. That's what archaeology has found just in the last few years. But again, a confirmation of the Holy Scriptures. Now, it wasn't legal to convene a court, as I say, in his home. Neither was it legal to convene the Sanhedrin on a holy day or at night. No trial of a capital offence could be held other than the Hall of Hewn Stone, as I mentioned, and a sentence could not be delivered on the same day as a verdict. Right? So when a person had a verdict of death, when they had a guilty verdict, they couldn't pronounce a sentence on the same day. That was impossible. There had to be some kind of cooling off before they actually... he was found guilty of a charge. You couldn't then go straight on and say, right, well, this is the sentence. They have to come back another day to do that and have a bit of time to cool off about it and think, rather than do it in the heat of the moment. But clearly, this court had no interest in due process. Once Caiaphas' mind was made up, he wouldn't be sidetracked by following due process. And when he found it impossible to find any false witnesses, he invented the charge of blasphemy. Now, just looking at those things that the false witnesses said, you need to compare, and I thought, well, you can't see in English, the English translation, you can't actually see what is really quite so different from what the false witnesses say, from what Jesus says. So I'd just like to spend a few minutes to explain that. In John's Gospel, chapter 2, we have, it reads, So the Jews answered and said to him, What sign do you show us since you do these things? Do these things, that is, cleansing the temple. And Jesus answered and said to them, Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then the Jews said, It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days? Now, what Jesus says there, well, the word that's translated destroy is just the simple Greek word luo, which means to loosen or to break up in some way. So, and it's an aorist imperative, which means that it's a one-time thing and it is a second person plural. So he's basically saying, he's not instructing them to destroy the temple, he's not encouraging them to destroy the temple, but it's basically a prophecy that they will do this. So if you destroy the temple, then I will raise it up in 3 days. But it's not the word that's translated destroy here, and when you find the false witnesses in English, it says destroy, but they're not the same Greek words. So destroy this temple in John's Gospel, chapter 2, is more loosen or dissolve this temple, talking about the temple of his body, of course. And in 3 days, I will raise it up. And he uses the Greek verb, agere, which is not building at all. It is literally to raise up. That word means to arouse or awaken. So it first of all means like to wake someone up from sleep, but it's also to raise someone from sickness. So when Jesus healed people and he raised them from the bed of sickness, then it's the same words there. And it's also used for being risen from the dead. So Herod, for example, of course he appears, he says, when he hears about Jesus, this is back in Matthew 14, he says, oh, this is John the Baptist risen from the dead. He uses the same word there, the same Greek word. So Jesus isn't saying, I'm going to build it in 3 days. He says, I am going to raise it in 3 days. He's talking about the verb there can be raised from sleep, raised from sickness, or raised from death. Right? That's what Jesus is saying. So he's not talking about building the temple. But the false witnesses come, and they say, in Matthew 26, they say, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple. And the word they use for destroy there is kataluo, which is to put down or to destroy. It's a much stronger word than what Jesus was talking about. Because Jesus' body wasn't destroyed in that sense, was it? He was killed, but no parts of his body were cut apart or anything like that. So Jesus talks about the dissolution of his body in that sense, the loosening of his body, but not the utter wasting and destruction of his body like you would do over destroying the temple, where not one stone would be left standing, as Jesus said. That would be destruction. And then the false witnesses say, and to build it in 3 days. They don't say raise it in 3 days. They say build it in 3 days. And the Greek word there is oikodomeo, which is to build a house. Literally means build a house, or by extension to build anything, build any structure like that. So Jesus' words have been twisted there. And not only that, Jesus said, destroy the temple. You destroy the temple, or if you destroy the temple. Whereas what is being said, the false witnesses say, Jesus is being charged by these false witnesses with sorcery. Because their testimony is, I am able to destroy the temple and to build it, rebuild it, you know, in 3 days. So that testimony is one of sorcery, that he's able to knock a temple down and to build it again, and that's sorcery. And then the other ones mentioned in Mark's gospel, it says, then some rose up and bore false witness against him, saying, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. Well, they've added on this business about hands, which Jesus didn't say. They've used this kataluo, destroy the temple, and they've used this building, I will build another. Where did this word building come from? It didn't come from Jesus' mouth. It came from the Jews. You go back to John chapter 2, Jesus says, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then the Jews said, it's taken 46 years to build this temple. That's the word that they use there, is oikodomeo. They use that word there. They're the ones that are talking about the building of the temple in terms of building a physical structure. And they're then using that. So these people are false witnesses. When Jesus says, I will destroy this temple, that's their false testimony. Then that's, and I will build another made without hands. That's not just sorcery, that's sacrilege. I will destroy the temple, right? Rather than you destroy the temple, I will destroy the temple. So they're now charging here, these false witnesses are charging Jesus with sacrilege and sorcery to be able to raise it again without hands. That would be sorcery. And of course, as you know, sorcery and sacrilege, like that, they were capital offences. You know, thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. Witches and wizards and sorcerers, they couldn't live. So they're getting testimony here by these false witnesses that will be testimony of a capital charge. That's what they want. They want a capital charge so that they can put Jesus to death. That's what Caiaphas said, that one man should die rather than all the people should perish. So that's what they wanted. But it would be, there was no, in Jewish trials, witnesses were absolutely necessary. Without witnesses, there could be no charge. Right? It's not like today where you can have a charge and then you can bring witnesses in. There could be no accusation or indictment without the agreed testimony of two witnesses. So in that sense, under Jewish law, the testimony of witnesses was both the evidence and the indictment. Right? So that was necessary as evidence and indictment. And no cross-examination could take place until two witnesses agreed. So Jesus' silence was not an unwillingness to offer a defence. Sometimes we might read that and think Jesus was just meekly just not putting any defence in, whatever. That's not what's happening here. Jesus is standing up and he's actually saying, you need to follow process. It was absolutely right that Jesus was silent. He didn't offer a defence because there hadn't been any witnesses that had come. They were all false witnesses. And if he were to start to defend himself, it would indicate that the false accusation were legitimate charges. Okay, so that's the reason why Jesus stayed silent. Because to start answering false accusations means that you believe there's some truth in the accusation. So he stayed silent. So it's wrongly, in our kind of jurisprudence, we can wrongly read the accounts as if Caiaphas was in some senses helping Jesus, saying, don't you answer any of these things? Like, come on, defend yourself. Like, as if Caiaphas was actually helping him. No, no, no. Caiaphas wasn't helping Jesus at all. What he was doing was he was trying to goad Jesus into answering the charges so that would give legitimacy to the false charges that were being given. It would end up in Jewish prudence that he would be incriminating himself. If he answered a word of those charges, he would be incriminating himself. So he doesn't answer. But he's being goaded by Caiaphas to answer. Come on, answer these charges. Look, can't you hear what these people are saying to you? So Caiaphas is trying to, he's trying to egg on Jesus to defend himself when no indictment has actually been made. That was a gross violation of judicial practice, and it was completely prejudicial. So, of course, the other thing is, if a capital offence had been made out, like sorcery or sacrilege, then one of the court, this is, you'll find this in the tractate Sanhedrin, in the Talmud, one of the court would have to have been appointed as counsel for the accused, if he had none. The fact that there wasn't one person appointed in the Sanhedrin to defend Jesus against a capital charge, in that sense, shows that these false witnesses really were false witnesses, that their testimonies didn't agree, because it couldn't proceed to the point where a capital offence had been made out as an indictment. So no indictment could be made, and at this point, Caiaphas is now quite frustrated. He's done what he can to get Jesus to self-incriminate himself. He's got a load of false witnesses. Unfortunately, they don't agree. So no indictment can be made. And if the trial had started, then a representative would be able to stand and cross-examine these false witnesses to make sure that their testimony stood up. They said, we heard this man say. So the first thing you would do is say, well, let's get some evidence that you were actually there when he said it. Right, so then some defence would be, some counsel would be provided for Jesus in this case. But the trial at this point was going nowhere. So Caiaphas was trying to goad Jesus to answer so that the process would get started. But Jesus' silence was in and of itself a rebuke to Caiaphas. So Caiaphas sits upon a means of getting Jesus to speak. Perhaps then Jesus would incriminate himself. So he adjured him under oath. Now, if you look at Leviticus chapter, don't look at it now. If you look at Leviticus chapter 5, verse 1, it basically says that if there's a speaking of an oath, if there is something to be said under oath, if you have to say something under oath in court or something like that, and you don't, and you refuse to give testimony, then you commit an offence, and you are guilty. So what the high priest is doing here is he is putting Jesus and saying, right, you won't answer anything, but I can get you to answer something now, because I'm going to put you under this oath that you have to answer this question of mine, and I'm doing it under oath. You must answer this question, otherwise you are guilty. That's what it says in Leviticus. Now Jesus, who is holy, harmless and undefiled, separate from sinners, he could not incur guilt in his own person. He took upon himself the guilt of the world, but he couldn't do anything wrong himself to have personal guilt himself. So therefore, when he is adjured by the high priest to answer, he had to answer the question. And he had to answer the question honestly, otherwise he would have been guilty of not telling the truth. So he is asked a leading question: are you the Christ, the Son of God? That's a leading question, isn't it? Not what are you, who are you, but are you the Christ, the Son of God? That's a leading question. He's asked this leading question, which shouldn't have even been asked. And he has to answer the question, and he has to answer it affirmatively. So then Jesus answers the question, because he has to answer the question, otherwise he would be guilty of sin, which is not possible. But you see, Jesus turns the tables on them in this, because essentially they want witnesses against Jesus. And what Jesus does in his answer is he gives them two witnesses. He gives them two scriptural witnesses. He gives them witnesses whose testimony agrees and whose character and testimony are unimpeachable. And so Jesus' answer there, when he talks about you will see the Son of God sitting on the right hand and coming in power and glory. He's conflating two things. Daniel chapter 7 verse 13, one like the Son of Man coming with the clouds of heaven. And Psalm 110 verse 1, sit at my right hand. And verse 5, the Lord is at your right hand. So he's adding these two things. And of course, Psalm 110, of course, is messianic for certain. And he's putting these two things together. Here are two biblical witnesses about the Messiah that agree, and their testimony is unimpeachable. Absolutely unimpeachable. So although it looks as though they've got the better of Christ, he's got the better of them, because they can't find any witnesses. But Jesus quotes two witnesses against them whose testimony is unimpeachable. Well, our time is going, so I'll draw to a close on this. Jesus told the truth in this. So a charge of blasphemy that was put to him was a false charge. They pronounced a death penalty on one who answered a leading question truthfully. Mistreatment of truth leads to mistreatment of persons, and cruelty follows injustice. It wasn't only the Romans who mocked and beat up Jesus, which happened later, as you know. Here, the religious leaders, who wouldn't dare to spit on Caiaphas's floor in his house, they spit upon the face of the Son of God, the Christ. And they punch him, they slapped him, as we've seen. Mark records that they blindfolded him, they mocked him, made sport of him. So sadism took over the highest court in the church. Well, just by way of a little application, because we need to draw this to a close, when Jesus was bound when he came to Annas, as we saw, and then he left him bound when he went to Caiaphas. But the one who was really bound was Annas, like Simon the sorcerer, where, if you remember, Peter said to him, you are in the gall of bitterness and the bond of iniquity. The one who was really bound wasn't Jesus, it was really Annas. Annas was bound by pride and greed and hate and deceitfulness. Jesus wasn't really bound with leather thongs because he could have broken them in an instant. But he was bound and constrained, shall we say. He was constrained in heart and mind to do the will of his Father, but not bound against his will. Jesus endured the injustices, the contradictions of sinners against himself to bring many sons to glory. And when we think about the world, the disobedient in the world, and even sadly disobedient Christians, Thomas Brooks, in Heaven on Earth, a Puritan writing there, he says, "Wicked men strive in prayer more to get off their chains than to get off their sins, more to be delivered from enemies without than lusts within." Disobedient Christians try to bind Jesus so that he will not meddle in their lives. Yet our thoughts are to be brought into captivity to Christ. Well, I'll leave it there. We can go further on in the trial at some other time. There's a lot more to be done, but that's Christ before Annas and Caiaphas. Thank you.